It is therefore ordered and adjudged that the said Donald John Trump be, and he is hereby, acquitted of the charges in said articles.
I move that the Senate, sitting as a court of impeachment on the articles against Donald John Trump, adjourn. Sine die.
The 3-week-long impeachment trial has come to an end. As expected, President Trump was acquitted and therefore will remain in office. And while the Democrats weren't able to convict the president, they did manage to stay united in their votes on both articles of impeachment. Even the moderate Democrats, whose seats could be vulnerable in upcoming elections, stuck to their party line. On the GOP side, Mitt Romney was the only Republican to break ranks and vote with the Dems.
I'm aware that there are people in my party and in my state who will strenuously disapprove of my decision. And in some quarters, I will be vehemently denounced. I'm sure to hear abuse from the president and his supporters. Does anyone seriously believe that I would consent to these consequences other than from an inescapable conviction that my oath before God demanded it of me?
Now, after this trial and the Iowa caucus debacle, Democrats are left navigating their way forward as we head into the 2020 election. Can they regain momentum after this week? Will it matter in the long run? And what does it mean to be a Democrat running for office this year? We're going to talk about it. I'm Arun Vanagopal, and this is The Takeaway. Former Democratic Representative Steve Israel joins me on the line for his take on where Democrats should head from here. Welcome, Congressman.
Thank you, Arun. Great to be with you.
Congressman, President Trump is touting yesterday's vote as a major win for him and his party. How big of a loss is this for Democrats?
Well, look, of course he's going to tout that it's a win. When the Mueller report came out, which specifically said they couldn't exonerate him, he went out and said that he was completely exonerated. It's a loss for the Constitution, in my view. It's a loss for the notion that nobody is above the law. Politically, however, I think the Democrats did do a good job of building the true narrative that this acquittal is clouded with murkiness, with partisanship. The fact that the Senate Republicans wouldn't allow a single witness, would not allow evidence, leaves people with a sense of skepticism about this acquittal. And that is the narrative that the Democrats needed, knowing fully that Senate Republicans would not be able to bring themselves to acquit this president.
How much of a risk is it for Democrats to focus on the scandal surrounding Trump as we approach the election?
Well, this is a debate among Democrats right now. There are some who say that the Democrats should continue to investigate the president, subpoena White House officials, hold oversight hearings. There are other Democrats who say, look, we've tried this. It doesn't work. We need to get back to kitchen table issues. I believe that they have to do both. They have to continue to exercise their constitutional oversight responsibility, but they've also got to be pounding away at President Trump's vulnerabilities. And one principal vulnerability is on the issue of health care. The polls are quite clear on this. The American people, even those who are Republican, and are considering voting for President Trump, do not like his position on health care, particularly his attempts to take away coverage for pre-existing conditions. So what I think the Democrats have to do is occupy two lanes, continue to investigate the president, but talk about his highly unpopular views and actions on health care.
We have to mention here that Democrats suffered a big blow given the debacle that was the Iowa caucuses. How does that change things for Democrats nationally right now?
Well, look, there's no question that the Democrats leave Iowa with in a state of some chaos and certain instability. This is not the outcome that anybody would have wanted. You know, this is like, in the Super Bowl, fumbling the first play. But I do believe that we tend to look at a moment, even as dramatic as this, and hype it, overhype it. I promise you that within a month or 2 months, and certainly by the time we get to Milwaukee, this is really going to be an interesting story, but is not going to dominate the discourse or the debate in American politics.
There's a lot of talk about establishment Democrats being concerned about Bernie Sanders winning the Democratic nomination. How much of a divide is there between the progressive and moderate wings of the party, and how much of a problem is that heading towards the election?
Look, honestly, there is a significant divide between progressives and more moderates. There is a divide between those who want a candidate who can beat Donald Trump, even if not ideologically pure, and those who want somebody who they believe is more ideologically pure. But I believe that that divide will narrow and, in fact, disappear as we get closer to the election.
Given the extent to which the president has aligned himself with white nationalism and the demonization of people of color, of Democrats of color, how should the party confront that going forward?
Well, the president has made a political calculation that's clear, and that is that he has to double down, triple down, and quadruple down with his base, which is why when you look at his polling, this is a guy who rarely exceeds 47 or 48% in job approval. His floor is about 43%. His ceiling is about 47%. And that's because the vast majority of Americans reject xenophobia. They reject his rhetoric. And they were sickened when he said that there were fine people on both sides of a neo-Nazi march. What the president needs to do is find a way to expand out of that base and try and appeal to more moderate voters and soften his image, which explains his Super Bowl ad. What the Democrats need to do is remind the American people what's in this president's DNA, and at the same time, offer the American people some economic hope, specifically by standing up for affordable, accessible health care.
Are Democrats, though, afraid that they're going to turn off swing voters, white working class voters who might be tired of hearing this stuff about, you know, white nationalism and whatnot?
No, look, again, if you are part of that 42-43% that loves Donald Trump, that kind of rhetoric not only doesn't bother you, but you may actually subscribe to it. But the 20% of voters who've not yet made a decision on whether they love or loathe Donald Trump, they're bothered by that rhetoric. They don't like it. It's why they don't support him. And so they're the ones who are up for grabs. The Democrats have a responsibility to remind the American people about the vile opinions of Donald Trump and his degrading talk about minorities in this country, but not at the not without talking about the things that those folks really talk most about and care most about, which is, if I get sick, am I going to be able to get insurance? You got to do both.
Representative Steve Israel is the former congressman from New York and was chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee from 2011 to 2015. Congressman, many thanks for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Thank you, Arun.
For more on how things look for Democrats following President Trump's impeachment acquittal and the Iowa caucus, let's go now to Nathan Gonzalez, editor and publisher of Inside Elections and election analyst for CQ Roll Call. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Nathan, former Congressman Israel just told us that despite the acquittal, the Democrats did what they needed to do with impeachment. Is he right?
Well, the impeachment of President Trump was never really part of the Democrats' 2020 campaign plan. I think a lot of them went at it with a sense of obligation and something that they needed to do, action they needed to take based on action that the president took. Now that it's done, I think Democrats obviously wanted a different result from the final trial. But I think there's a sense of relief among some Democrats, particularly the Democratic members who have competitive races, that now this is behind them and they can get back to focusing on other issues, as Congressman Israel talked about. You know, when we fast forward over the next 9 months, I think it's more likely that Republicans bring up impeachment over the course of the campaign. And specifically what they're going to do is they're going to add up the days, weeks, months that Republicans spent on pursuing the impeachment of President Trump. And they're going to say, look, Democrats weren't focused on these other issues. Meanwhile, Democrats are going to, particularly House Democrats, are going to point to a number of bills that they've passed as an effort to show that they were working on other things while doing this impeachment.
Certainly, House Democrats, Democrats in general, can't run from what happened with the impeachment and the acquittal. Do they own the process, or do they say, let's just move on from here?
I mean, they do own it, I guess, whether they want to or not. I'm skeptical. I view this impeachment and the trial as a historic event, but potentially politically insignificant. I think most Americans already made up their mind whether the president was guilty or not before the inquiry even started. And I expect that to remain the same, or the basically the president's job approval to remain roughly the same as we get a few days beyond the actual vote, because so far we've seen that very little changes public opinion around President Trump. He's had virtually the same job approval or disapproval rating for more than a year now. And so it's the key will be looking at how Democrats handle the future attacks that will be coming at them from Republicans for the time spent.
So let's focus on some of the Democrats you've been really paying attention to. Back in the fall, seven Democrats, all of them elected during the recent 2018 blue wave, wrote in favor of impeachment in The Washington Post. You just wrote about how these so-called national security Democrats are examples of the challenges facing the GOP in 2020. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, these seven Democrats represent, I think it's kind of a microcosm of the challenge Republicans have in taking the House. Four of these Democrats represent districts that President Trump carried in 2016. Three of them represent districts that Clinton carried, but very narrowly. So these are the type of districts that Republicans need to win in order to regain the House majority. The challenge is that in most of them, the Republican challenger or challengers are falling dramatically behind in terms of fundraising. And this is specifically where impeachment ties in. And for example, in Michigan's 8th District, Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin was the subject of attacks from the Republican National Committee to not even pursue an inquiry into President Trump, and they were trying to hold her feet to the fire. But when we get to the end of the year and to today, I think it actually energized Democratic donors, and now Congresswoman Slotkin had $2.9 million in her campaign account at the end of the year. Meanwhile, the top Republican fundraiser in that race has about $300,000, and so that cash discrepancy, I think, is going to be important moving forward, that even when Republicans say that she was ignoring kitchen table issues, that she will have enough money to try to shape and drive the conversation in a way that's beneficial to her and help her win a race that Republicans probably need to win in order to get back to the majority.
Real quick, Nathan, Congressman Israel talked about the importance for Democrats to focus on health care. Is that a winning strategy?
You know, I think Democrats will return to health care because health care was what helped them regain the House in 2018. So I think they're going to go back to it. And health care, Congressman Israel talked about how Democrats are going to talk about health care. Republicans are going to talk about health care, too, because they're going to talk about socialism, government takeover of health care, and the cost of the plans being put forth by some of the presidential candidates. So health care, be prepared to hear about health care for at least another 9 months, if not 9 years and beyond.
Nathan Gonzalez is editor and publisher of Inside Elections and election analyst for CQ Roll Call. Thanks so much to you.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.